All right, 7:51. I've had the pleasure to speak with former President Carter on many occasions, many of them in this studio. And it is an honor to welcome him back to the show. Mr. President, how are you this morning?
I'm just fine, Steve. It's good to be with you and all the folks around Chicago. I look forward to being with you in a couple of days.
Well, you know, it's always great to have you on the show. I wish we could do it in person, but we'll do that again soon. And my daughter, Amy, says hello.
All right. Well, my daughter, Amy, is also very delighted to have the same name.
Yes, and you were very sweet to my daughter when she was here, and she talks about it all the time. A call to action specifically deals with the women of the planet, and you and I both know that without the women of the planet, we wouldn't be here. And I mean that literally and figuratively. So talk about the inspiration of why you did this book.
Well, the Carter Center has had programs around the world, 79 different countries. And the more we've been in those countries, we've realized the horrible abuse that takes place against women and girls that quite often is not recognized and certainly not addressed adequately. It gets worse and worse. And the reason that it is so bad is that rich countries like the United States has terrible abuse of women and girls that goes unnoticed. For instance, the two most revered institutions in our country both have almost unlimited and very surprising degrees of sexual abuse. Sexual assault takes place on university campuses
right. In
an incredible degree, and quite often it's not reported because the presence of great universities like the University of Chicago and Emory University, where I teach, and the University of Georgia and Harvard and so forth, don't want the outside world to see an increase in the number of sexual assaults reported. So they encourage a victim of a rape not to take legal action, not to try to prosecute the boy who becomes a serial rapist because he knows he can get away with it. And the same thing happens in the military. As you probably noticed, year before last, there were 26,000 cases of sexual assault in the military, and only about 300 or so punished the rapist. And there again, it's the commanding officers just don't want to have a black mark against their record by reporting that there was a sexual assault in his company or in his battalion. And this takes place in a much greater degree overseas. And the second thing that is covered in the book, and I have suggested resolutions for all of these that we can just work together, is the number of mothers and fathers who murder their babies if she's a girl. And this takes place in families that are very poor, where they don't feel like they can support several children. They want boys to kind of give them Social Security when they get older. And then there are other countries like China and India that limit the size of families. So if they see that a girl is born, they just strangle her at birth. And now with the advent of sonograms, they can detect in the fetus that it's going to be a girl, so they just abort selectively female embryos. And this has resulted in the missing of about 160 million girls in the world today. Almost an entire generation of girls have been killed by their parents because they prefer boys to be born in a family. So these are the kind of things that go on in a lot of countries, in addition to honor killings and the abuse of women in this country, for instance, by being paid 23% less than men for the same exact jobs. And the other thing that I'll mention, I'm not trying to hurry too much, but is the fact that when countries like India and China have a shortage of girls, then the boys can't find anybody to marry. And this contributes to the international slavery that afflicts a lot of people. The United States Department of State now, the Secretary of State, has to issue a report every year on the degree of human trafficking or slavery. It's much greater than it ever was during the 19th century when slaves were coming out of Africa to the New World. It's about $32 billion. A lot of that money, about half that money, goes to rich countries. And unfortunately, Atlanta and Chicago are two of the most prevalent places for sexual slavery because of our great big airports. And so this goes on as well. So this
and it's all part of the book, a call to action. And part of the reason that you have such in-your-face graphic detail in this is because we live in a country where we see people living relatively happy lives, and we need to let people know that this is going on in the world, and we need to lead and find solutions to this and treat it like the problem it is, as opposed to sticking our heads in the sand and ignoring it.
That's exactly right. So there are some specific things we can do. Our U.S. Congress can you know, ratify resolutions passed by the United Nations and things of that kind. And you know, employers can pay fair salaries to their employees who are women. And one of the root causes of it is the great religions on earth that ordains, by distorting the Bible, that women are inferior in the sight of God. As you know, the Catholic Church doesn't permit women to be deacons or priests. And the Southern Baptist Convention goes even further than that by prohibiting women in their seminaries or graduate institutions from either even teaching a class that has a boy student in it. Those are the kind of things that are, that convince the secular world that if God doesn't think women are equal to me, then why should I treat her with proper respect?
Do we need women to be more outspoken about this as the powerful gender that they are in countries like this? Or do we need men to lead the way, or does it need to be a group effort? It would seem to be the latter.
It needs to be a group effort, and women need to be much bolder because, for instance, a girl students need to report it. And now there is an interpretation of a Section 9, Title 9 in universities that used to protect women from not having a chance to engage in sports. But now Section 9 has been interpreted to require that any university have a very strong program intact on the campus to encourage girls to report rapes and not to have the administrators of a university to conceal it. Those are the kind of things that we can do in the United States.
You know, I'm a fan, as you know, and you've been very nice to be a friend over these years, and I just am always amazed at your level of energy, because at 89, you make me look about, you know, 99, the way you run around the world and all the things that you do. So I know you're going to keep it up for a long time to come, but I just think this book is a wonderful legacy to your wife, to your daughter, and to women everywhere. And I'll finish with this. You've been front and center for so many years. Has your opinion of this as a problem changed through the Carter Center work and evolved through the years? Or is this something you've wanted to get to for a long time and you finally had the opportunity?
I would say it has changed. You know, back when the new millennium came in the year 2000, I really thought that the disparity of income between rich and poor people were the greatest problem in the world. But there's no doubt in my mind now that the unrecognized and uncorrected abuse of women and girls in the world is the most severe challenge, human rights and otherwise, that has not been adequately addressed by people who are in a position to do so. That's the worst problem, I think, that the world faces, and we don't want to face it.
I know you got many people to speak with today, but I hope we can do this again soon. And I've got a couple of things I've been meaning to send to you. Can I still reach you through the Carter Center?
Absolutely. I look forward to it.
All the best, sir, and continued good health.